Hi, welcome to Backstage Soundtrack, where we talk to musicians about music and discover some new tunes along the way. I'm Tom from Hot Tub Time Machine. This week, I'm chatting to Sam Hales from Jungle Giants. You could be my little dream. Sam is a classic modern musician. He writes, produces, and releases all of his own music and has created an amazing musical career through his own talent and hustle. The first Jungle Giants EP came out in 2011, and as you'll hear, Sam totally self-funded its production, working day and night at Macca's and a late-night convenience store. Since then, he's released four full albums that have gradually moved towards a more electronic sound and produced a bunch of hit songs that have made the Jungle Giants a festival favourite. Sam and I chatted over Zoom in August 2021, not long after the release of their awesome new album, Love Signs, and a few days after Sam proposed to his girlfriend Grace from Confidence Man. Sam was in his Melbourne studio using a pot plant to hold up his microphone. As we chat, we listen to some great music. If you hear something you like, all the songs are in a Spotify playlist in the episode description. Let's do it. This is me talking to Sam Hales from Jungle Giants on Backstage Soundtrack. So, first question, what's the last thing you listened to, Sam? If we look at your phone, would it be a podcast?
Oh, music, this is funny.
It can't be work-related. It can't be demos.
Yeah, no. Well, I was preparing for this kind of, but I was kind of just going through, like, you know, songs that were triggering parts of the album, memories of when I was making the album. And
okay,
it was Foolish by Ashanti.
I've seen that reference a lot. You're saying like 90s R&B and Ashanti. So I was going to ask
R&B.
You about that.
100%.
Foolish. Oh, there we go. Ashanti.
You'll know it. It's the big banger. I mean, she's got lots of bangers.
People think I know a lot more songs than I do.
Wait, you don't know this?
I don't think I do. What do you love about this bit of music?
The fucking chimes. So this is the thing about 90s R&B. A level of percussion that you hear, there's so many layers of percussion. For a drummer like me, I can nerd out and be like, they've got fucking wind chimes everywhere through this song.
Yeah.
And the beauty of the production is you don't really notice that when you're on the dance floor popping along. All you feel is the beat. It's just really good music making, I reckon. 90s R&B pop.
Yeah, totally.
Sometimes I think there's like a rain, you know, there's rain sticks.
Oh, I love a rain stick. Love a rain stick.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a rain stick in this song.
What other 90s R&B do you like? Are there other songs in that genre that like...
Well, seriously, like Timbaland is one of my favorite artists. So there's a whole spectrum of Timbaland's 90s stuff that he was doing.
I mainly know him for the Missy Elliott stuff. I think that was the first time I saw like... You know, because she's always going, Timbaland, Missy Elliott, Slim Shady, Mr. Reader,
Timbaland, Slim Shady. Timbaland. I know, how good's announcing who's featuring in the track, people? I guess pop people do that still these
days. It's on my favourite, the one she did with Eminem. This one? Here we go, come on.
Holy crap. I don't know this. Oh, dude, that's a hefty beat, isn't it?
That is classic.
What do you reckon's doing that?
Well, I mean, you tell me, man.
I reckon that's like either a baritone sax, those really big ones. Yeah, it's got to be some kind of reeded instrument.
What do you play? What's your instrument catalog? What are your instruments?
I play the drums first and foremost. That's my thing. I wanted to, you know, the Conservatorium of Music in Brisbane.
Of course.
Yeah, my career goal was to be a jazz drummer, and I wanted to go there. And when I was at high school, I was doing the Young Con, which was this like initiative to inspire young musicians and, you know, show them the courses, stuff like that. So I was like just gonna do it. Before that, I played the flute. I was pretty good at the flute.
Tight.
I used to do this thing where I'd enter. There are a thing called bursaries in the flute world. Instead of competition, you enter a bursary and then you toot your flute against other competing flautists. And I was like a competitive flautist in my like maybe when I was like, but when I was around 15, I stopped playing the flute. But before that, I was earning like a couple of hundred bucks like every couple of months just competing as a flautist.
Oh, you got money. Sweet.
Yeah, I got money. I was getting paid.
Getting paid for those flute dollars.
Yeah.
Flute bucks.
And then it's like, you know, it's silly, but like when I was like in high school, you know, when you start really caring about like what like girls think of you and like trying to be cool, I never thought that the flute wasn't cool as a young person. And then at high school, I started getting bullied. I got fairly bullied about it.
Sure.
And it's unfortunate because like who the cares? Instruments shouldn't dictate anything. They're instruments are instruments. They should be sexless. They should be faceless. You know what
indeed,
I mean?
Indeed. But the flute in particular is quite gendered, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Unfairly as well.
I think American Pie might not have done you any favors on that in retrospect.
100%. People used to say that summer camp quote all the time to me. But I tilted to the drums in high school. And I don't like to think that it maybe I was, it was as an effect of the bullying, but I think maybe it was. But then once I discovered the drums, I really found my calling, I think. I'm like a loud-mouthed, screamy guy, and I realized that you could hit the drums, you get instant feeling from the drums. It didn't have to...
And girls dig it.
And the girls dig it.
So what's an early musical memory for you? What's a song that resonated with you when you were a kid?
I wonder like how far back I can really go. I think like I feel like I had stages where my brain like turned on to music.
Yep, yep.
And I think generally I was always interested in musical as a family. My mum's Irish and, you know, kind of we all had to learn an instrument when we were young and we all were drawn to music.
Oh, right on. She plays music? Your mum?
Yeah, she played the piano. My sister is a professional cellist.
Oh, wow.
My brother played the trumpet.
Far out.
Yeah, so there's a lot of music in my family and I guess like it was just always there, so.
Did she ever make a living from it or was she just passionate about it?
No, she was just passionate.
Okay.
And she would always be like slamming on a record with a glass of wine in her hand, be like, Sammy, come listen to this.
Yeah.
It's Joan Armatrading, you know, stuff like that.
I don't know enough about Joan Armatrading.
Actually, put on Joan Armatrading. I don't really know her that well. Like my mum would always just put her on, but she's just amazing.
I am not in love.
This is the first Joan Armatrading song, Love and Affection, that comes up.
But I'm open to persuasion.
Ooh, jazzy.
Oh, she has the most amazing voice.
Where's the best for romance?
I think like when I first, you know, got tuned into I want to make my own music Bon Iver was when that was my first ever like ding and something clicked in my brain and I just, my whole life since then has been whatever direction my brain dinged to, I've been in that direction since then. So I think Bon Iver woke up the demon in me.
What song particularly, is there any Bon Iver that we should play?
Yeah, yes. So this is, Bon Iver Holocene.
Yep.
This one is one of my favorites. It wasn't particularly the one that dinged on my head, but.
What do you think it is about Bon Iver's sound that like resonated with you?
I think it's there's a melancholy to his music that I think I like music where you don't have to just use vocals to portray a feeling. And I think he does that in just amazing way that resonates with me. His chords are always the perfect sad where they're slightly hopeful, but they're sad. It tells me a lot of feelings. And I just think he's a master at that. With his hands, he can tell you a little story instead of just lyrics. But still, he's an amazing vocalist and amazing lyrics. But I just think that if you listen to his chords and listen to his instruments, they tell even more, you know?
How were you a teenager when you came into Bon Iver?
A teenager, yeah. I think that I must have been like 13 or 14, something like that, 14 or something like that.
It's kind of interesting music for a teenager to be into. I do think there's something in when you're a teenager, you're trying to find something that's distinctively you. You know what I mean? It's, people end up going down some, you know, you want something that's different.
You go down some alleys.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that you're right there. And I think what I found with Bon Iver, I think I found something that I thought that I related to.
Yeah, right on.
It's so cool. When I first got my car, I got this super shit car. It was so funny. Like my sister learnt on it, my brother learnt on it, then I got the car. And it was this Daihatsu Charade, like 1989. I don't know, something. It was just like barely working. And when I first got my license, I thought, what song am I going to put on? And I put on Bon Iver and I just cranked it. And then I just drive. I would drive up this mountain called Mount Glorious up in Brisbane. And I would just drive and just soar. And this is the perfect driving music because you're part of the guitar. And I would just be soaring it left and right, up and down. Oh man, that's some good memories, just hooning to Bon Iver.
Man, what I love about that though is that it's not the kind of music that you'd see on a Triple M driving city or what, you know, is going to be on a driving playlist on Spotify. It's pretty unique.
100%.
Driving music. And I think it's a credit to your taste that you find the euphoria and stuff in the difference in it. It's pretty interesting. It's lovely though, man.
I would suggest to anyone that feels like finding some good driving music, try this song. Find somewhere you can go to a racetrack, hoon really fast and play this song really loud.
See, this is train music. I'm like on a train in Europe, looking out the window. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you're right there too. This is, you know, if you play this on a train, guaranteed crying, guaranteed tears.
So you wanted to be a jazz drummer. That's pretty interesting to me. Like,
yeah.
What jazz were you into? Who were your influences in that kind of world?
A big one was Buddy Rich.
Wow.
Buddy Rich is one of my favorite drummers.
And how did you access his stuff? Because I was a bad drummer. Nowhere near. And so my teacher used to show us these old VHSs of Buddy Rich.
Oh, yeah.
How did you connect with his music? Were there songs or recordings?
I think his was, I would just, you know when YouTube was really shit?
Yes.
I don't know. YouTube used to be really funny because there used to be like, you know, 10 videos maybe of every subject. Now there's just thousands, thousands, thousands. And I remember I was just looking up drumming videos all the time when I was young, and there was just a Buddy Rich video that I just like would watch probably every night before bed.
Right on.
And he had that jazz stick style,
yep.
You know, with the left hand, and he would just, what he would do, he would just do this. It looked like he was just shaking, like, and the speed that, it didn't look, what you could see, it didn't sound like that. Do you know what I mean? He was moving his hand like one stroke and he was getting a double, like, did it.
Yeah.
He's so fast. And I mean, that was like what he was famous for, was the speed in which he could play.
Yeah.
And he would hit other things. Sometimes he'd hit the rims. Clickety-clack, clickety-clack.
Yeah. Have you heard the bus rants? The Buddy Rich bus rants?
No. What's that?
It's like, I think it was on Seinfeld's thing. It's one of his favorite comedy things in the world was Buddy Rich on the bus yelling at his musicians.
Oh my God.
The most explicit latent rants, but they have this kind of rhythm to them that would make.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Hang on, I'll play one to you.
Good mashup.
Check it out.
What the fuck do you think is going on here? You had too many fucking days off and you think this is the game? You think I'm the only one that's going to work up there while you motherfuckers sit out there and cram all over this fucking joint? What do you think this is, anyhow?
And so did you end up going to the con when you left school?
No. I kind of see, there was like a weird transition that I had. Just like when I went from the flute to the drums, I completely just stopped the drums to start songwriting. So that was like a big transit. When I started, Bon Iver really had like hit his stride in my heart, and I was listening to more kind of, you know, singer-songwriter music then. Because by the way, when I was a drummer, when I was at my peak drumming times, it was all metal. I would just listen to death metal. It was just, because that's some, to me, that was the most drummy music that I liked. It
really appealed to you in a nerdy, technical, musical way.
Yeah, I was just nerding out.
On who? What metal?
Lamb of God. Lamb of God. Oh my God. Actually, this has been so long since I've listened
to
Lamb of God.
I'm so not across Lamb of God.
Have you? You've never heard them?
Laid to Rest. Is that what we want?
Yeah, try Laid to Rest.
Let's give that a go. Whoa. Oh, I see. Bit of double kicks.
You hear the
technical.
And there'd be a lot of different time signatures.
Yeah, totally. I look for my generation in the 90s, it was Tool. Like my love of metal kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Tool and Danny Carey.
So you know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I could
love. Hectic.
Pretty hectic, man. but yeah, so I went from that to Bon Iver, which is hilarious. But that's like, so that's kind of consistent with how I am sometimes. I'll make these big flips. And so, yeah, I stopped the drums because I got more into singer-songwriter stuff. And that's when I started, you know, conceiving the idea of starting a band. And so the drums just kind of, you know, in terms of being a career path, they kind of stopped. But what they've done, like they've helped me so much in my songwriting and my production. Like that's the probably one of the biggest tools I use, you know.
I think so many producers and DJs are either very good drummers such as yourself. Gusto from Hermitude, phenomenal drummer. And actually a lot of the DJs were the craft drummers. So we were like the drummers who kind of gave up.
Yeah, you know, actually... Gus with Hermitude, I like fully bonded with him recently. We did it. We made a track.
Wonderful.
We spoke drums, and I feel like you just know, because we were sitting in the studio and we were kind of like messing around with arrangement. And I just think there's always something you can always tell if someone's played the drums. The way that they think about music, it's more rhythmic. There's more layout.
So you're on the guitar then when you're songwriting, or is it always production? Because earlier I was asking your arsenal of instruments.
Yeah, it was just acoustic guitar. That was the thing, just acoustic guitar. I think I asked my mum to, you know, for my like, I think it was like my 15th birthday or 16th. I said, I was like, mum, instead, because she was talking about getting me a car, helping with getting me a car. And I asked her if I could trade that in to get a good guitar. And then she was like, okay. Like, she's like, you sure? You can have a car. And I was like, no, like the, you know. My mom got me a really nice acoustic guitar. You know, she was like, you know, she never earned that much money, but mom was so amazing because she knew that music was valuable.
Yeah.
You know, it was worth spending money on. And, she, you know.
And you already had the Daihatsu Charade you were talking about earlier. So
I had the Charade, which was like definitely illegal to be driving, but I hung on to it.
Imagine mom was kind of stoked about that. That's pretty awesome to have your son go, no, I want a guitar. Like, I'd be stoked if my daughter was like, no. I want this.
I think she was. She was definitely scared, though. But she was supportive. That was the thing. Like she would always say, "Sammy, I know some friends that like are lawyers. You know, they're lawyers."
Oh, because you didn't go to uni, I suppose, did you? That's why she. Yeah, right.
No, I was all in. Yeah, and she was like, "Do you want to? I don't know. Like, you know, do you want to just? I don't know." She was, you know, gingerly offering me other options, but I was always pretty steadfast with it. And I think she was supportive of that. She couldn't do anything about it anyway.
Yeah, totally. And was your vision that you were going to be in bands and create the career that you have? Is that like you are out of school going,
100%.
That's what I want to do?
Yes, yes.
That's awesome.
Dude,
that's awesome.
I was like, I was stone cold about it. Like when I finished school, I'm a grade above everyone in the band. Which makes me sound like a fucking loser. It's, I don't know why. I spent a lot of time like looking for people in my grade that I wanted to be in the band with. And it just, all those three guys, I asked them all because I just thought they were like the best suited and I knew them well.
And you all went to the same school together?
All went to the same school, yeah. And then so I left school. The guys were finishing grade 12. And I realized I needed like so much money to record the first EP. Like I asked my old drum teacher and then I asked a couple of like people that I knew that knew people in music. And I just kind of put together like a quote and to hire the drum kit, to get the engineer, the mixer, fucking mastering. It was like $6,500 or $6,000. And I was like, you know, I was like 16 and I didn't have that kind of money.
No.
So I was like, shit. And I really wanted to get the songs. Like I was like, I want it now. I need to get, I had the whole EP in my head. I'd been like recording into my phone and I was just like, fuck, it just needs to happen now. So I went down the street from where my mom's house was and there was a McDonald's there. And then just next to that McDonald's was a Night Owl convenience store. And I applied for a job at both. Wasn't really expecting I'd get both, but they both said, yeah. And I was like, fuck, okay, I can work this out. If I work in the mornings at the 9-hour convenience store, then I could have the afternoon night shift at McDonald's and I could get the money really fast then. So I just worked the two jobs and I was doing the fucking craziest hours. Like it could have at least 60, 70 hours a week just working, fucking taking orders at McDonald's and stacking up Coke shelves at night, our convenience store.
And daydreaming about music the whole time.
Daydreaming about music the whole time. And there was a cool thing about the night owl. I could stand there and like a lot of people, there would, you know, sometimes no one would come in for like 15 minutes at a time. So I'd sit there with a pen and paper and I'd like write lyrics or I'd like, you know, work on the song in my head and then figure out like what I wanted to do once I got recorded. I had so many things to plan. And I would also, I would figure out how much money I've got in my bank account, how much I'm making, how much longer I need to do this for. Like it was almost like a fucking prison sentence. I was like, one more day. And then I was doing the maths and I was like, yeah, so that many more hours, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, oh shit. One day, like, I was like, I've got enough money. I have enough money. I was like, I actually figured out I totally have enough money. So I finished that shift at Night Owl and I just went straight to McDonald's and I just quit. And then after that, I kept the Night Owl job, but then I called the band. I was like, I've got the money. We're good. And it was just coming up to their holidays. So it was just perfect. And I booked in at Airlock Studios in Brisbane. One of the guys from Powderfinger owns it. Really beautiful studio. And we just went there during their holidays, the guys' holidays, and recorded the EP over like, I think it was like three days, four days.
And is that the self-titled Jungle Giants like EP? Is that the one?
Yeah.
Can we listen to a song from that? Like, could you mind if I put on like Mr. Polite or something?
Yeah, totally, totally. And so I'm playing the drums in this as well. So it's so cute.
And then after you'd recorded and stuff, is that when the business kind of kicked in for you and you got signed and things like that?
Well, actually, it's a funny thing. Like, I got the EP. And then I paid for it to get printed and then we got a fair amount printed and then I started putting them under the doorways of venues in Brisbane in a fucking manila folder and then it said, hi, my name is Sam. This is the Jungle Giants new EP and I wasn't really sure how to get gigs but I was fucking doing that.
that's so great,
and
man.
So I eventually got a message from the zoo and I think they'd listened. And they were like, yeah, we can book you. We can book a show. So we started like, you know, softly doing shows and eventually we were playing at a place. I can't remember the name of the place, but when we first met our manager, when the business started really starting properly, because there was a couple of managers that was hitting us up at the time. One of them, his name's Stu, which is still my manager. And he had booked us on for a show, but it was just going to be me acoustic. That's how it was booked. But then last minute, I just invited the band to try out the new songs. And Stu walked in thinking that the opening band for his band was going to be an acoustic guy. But there was a fucking full-on band just ripping and roaring. And he apparently was just like, loved it. And he just got this feeling. Came up to us and, you know, did a spiel. And anyway, like long story short, he ended up becoming our manager. And he had just left Sony. He was head of A&R in Sony. And he could see something in us and he kind of offered to us an idea of trying to do this all ourselves, not signing to a label and just seeing if we could be self-supported, self-sufficient. And because I think he'd been a bit disillusioned with the whole A&R world and the record label world where he'd seen like a lot of people, you know, just being taken one way by the label when the artist wanted to go another way. And he said, you know, try and keep the power yourself. Let's just do this. And I was like, that sounds awesome.
Right on.
That's how my career's been since. You know, I've been an independent artist, you know, the whole time. And we're still doing it. And I think, like, it's so cool that was Stu's... You know, he had a dream of doing it. I didn't know anything about that, but I'm so lucky to be guided by I've just had the right people, I think, in my career, and I think I've just listened to the right advice. And
also, it sounds like you've hustled. You've hustled.
I've hustled as fuck, yeah. But see, that's the thing. I can sniff out other hustlers. And Stu is a hustler. Stu was like, let's fucking keep the control, keep the money. Don't fucking just sign, you know, don't just do what other people do just cause.
Yeah.
I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for listening. Do you know what I mean? Because I could have just been like, what's this guy talking about? Gotta get a record deal. That's how you do it.
Totally.
But we kind of took his advice and we made our own record label. So that's what we are technically signed to.
That's awesome.
There's no one else signed to it though. It's very exclusive.
Love that.
Make space, 'cause I'm a
Was there a dance music awakening for you? Because your start of your sound was obviously more singer-songwriter. You've talked about jazz, you've talked about heavy metal, but now your sound is fairly synonymous with dance music. Was there a moment where you suddenly realised that that was going to be a part of your music?
I think that there was... Yes, there was. There was a shift, but I went through really weird shifts where on my second record, which was kind of like a difficult record for me... I was listening a lot to Beck at the time. And I think Beck's kind of like a bit of like a chameleon where, you know, you could say he's a rock guy or you could say he's a you know, chop and change kind of dance guy.
Sample. What kind of Beck were you listening to?
But what was I listening to? I was listening to, actually, let me just check. It was like turntables and a microphone, whatever that was.
Oh, two turntables and a microphone. Yeah, that's where it's at. That's my generation.
Yeah,
that's my
where era it's at, Beck. Man.
It's so good.
It's so cool. He's so dramatic as well.
Yeah. I also love, I'm into 90s grooves at the moment, the locked groove, which has kind of come back a bit, hasn't it? But the...
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
It's a great break too.
Yeah. Wonder how much of that is samples.
I know. I have a feeling. I just have a feeling. It just sounds too. It's got to be a sample. It's got to be some sick sample.
Mm. So anyway, how did you get from there to writing a dance floor? Because a lot of your stuff is not out of place at a rave.
Oh, absolutely. And that's it's a funny thing now because like early Jungle Giants fans, if they just stopped, if they took time out and then they came back now, they'd be like, what the fuck? What's happened?
But if you listen to all the songs, there's like a progression over the course
progression.
Of your albums and stuff.
So I went from that and then I picked up, I just got so, you know, that record was really hard for me. It didn't get very well received and I know why. It's because I had the wrong attitude when I was making that record. I was almost rebelling against what our first record was. I had this weird thing in my head. I was like, I'm more than indie pop. Look, I can do this. And for some reason, I just thought I had to convince everyone of everything. And I wasn't thinking about the music. I took my eye off the music.
Right.
I still, you know, I'm still proud of that record because I kind of pulled it together last minute. But it was really difficult for me because I think it didn't really represent me at the time. That's why it was a bit hard. But we still, you know, we still survived that and like, you know, the money went down a little bit. People were pissed off. Some people were pissed off. And this kind of interesting thing happened to me after that. I kind of realized I didn't have anything to lose when I was making the next batch of songs. And what I had to do was just figure out what I loved. And I just had this like epiphany. It was just like, fuck it. I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want and not be scared about what, or not try to convince people. I just shifted my whole motive. This was the first, our third record, our Dancey Yes.
Quite Frosty.
One was the first work that I produced. So I was in my, you know, in my writing room that I had at the time and I was listening to so much LCD Sound System.
Right.
And I remember one day I was in the pool and my girlfriend, my fiance now, Grace, was next to me. And I was swimming and then I just like bought my head up and I looked at her. I was like, Grace. She's like, what? And I was like, I can do band dance music like that. And then she was like, what? Yeah, what? I was like, I can make bandy but dancey music. I can make that. And then she was like, cool, baby. Yeah, I know. You totally can. But what had happened was I realized I think I'd figured out a flavor that I really wanted. I wanted, you know, those loopy, fastish, like percussive sounds, you know, with kind of like the singer-songwriter flair. You know, I kind of figured out the kind of thing.
Are there any songs that you can think of that represent that? Were there any that you listened to?
This one, 100%. This one was a big one. So LCD Sounds, like what they were, he's melancholic, but he's got dancey band elements. And it was just like a big inspiration thing for me, you know?
This song in particular?
This song in particular.
Yeah. It's pretty great.
I love this.
It's pretty incredible.
Song.
Like it's like 7.5 minutes of just like the same piano loop, just building.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's just an incredible song. That's how it starts. Trying to find. So Sound of Silver, oh, was that the one? Yeah, that was. Oh yeah, can you play Time to Get Away?
Mm-hmm,
Time to Get Away. This is a big drum beat for me.
Let's check it out. Mmm.
How good.
It sounds like Billie Jean. I'm like, ding, ding.
Yeah,
ding,
it does. Ding, it ding, does. Ding.
It's time to get away.
Oh.
It's time to get
so
away.
So good.
From you, it's time to get away. It's time.
Yeah, I don't know enough about the LCD sound system. This is good.
Oh, dude, get into this record. Listen to this record. It's just fucking crazy.
You bought a lot of money. But me.
At the time, I was so deep into dance music. I was kind of anything that was slightly indie. I
was yeah, okay, yeah.
But, you know, we all have our weird snobbery at times with music, don't we?
Oh, yeah, we all, yeah, it's what flavors us. But so this record, sorry, this song in particular, that inspired a lot of, there's, I have a song called Feel the Way I Do, which was the one of the first kind of big singles off the third record.
Yeah.
And I wanted the drums to sound exactly like that. Exactly like that. So I called, the band had suggested to me, they were like, you know, we want you to produce it. It sounds really good.
Sam's mic just fell off out of his pot plant there.
Yeah, yeah. And then so I called up Constantine, which is my friend at the time, and I was like, can you help me make a record, but can you make the drums sound like this? And then just play, like, showed him that song. See, the drums are tight as fuck, and they're like...
Yeah. It's kind of a cleanness, isn't it?
It's clean, it's and it's crisp. I know you feel
the way I do. It's also like a minimalism that leads to the drop there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That tension.
And that
release.
Screechy sound. Because there's not that much going on, you know? It's like pretty... It's just like not too much. But so that was like a big thing for me. LCD took me into that dance world.
Wonderful.
Because I could see that you could make, you know, melancholic, beautiful, kind of sad things with a dance beat. And that was just a big realization for me.
Totally. And so moving into your most recent album, Love Signs, to me it sounds perhaps even more like dancey and electronic. Is that a fair thing to say about?
100%. 100%. And I think, like, for me, I found that organic thing that I want. I found that I could supply that with less, you know what I mean? So
what does organic mean to you, Sam, in that context?
It's like the feeling of someone playing something live, you know, either acoustic or the drums, like a hi-hat, I find adds, if you play a live hi-hat over a kick sample and a snare sample, the thing that makes it feel organic and gives it like a real feeling is the hi-hats. There's a human element to the hi-hats. And I would eventually loop it, but I was finding that was giving me the same feeling. Sorry, I keep hitting this microphone.
It's in a pop plant. Guys.
And also, it made me more mobile. That was another huge thing. Like, I didn't need to go to a studio anymore. And Love Signs, I just made that in my house, you know, in my home studio. And I had the luxury of not needing the studio anymore. So what I got was just, I got a set of hi-hats. I have some hi-hats here. And I've just got like synthesizers and stuff. And I've just got a shaker and a hi-hats. And that's all I need to make it, you know. But I've got like acoustic guitar and stuff. And I think that's an integral part of the new jungle sound, is dancey, kind of hypnotic, hooky bass sounds. But then, you know, then you got the acoustic in there, like supplying that kind of organic, melancholic vibe.
Is Tame Impala a big influence for you, or like someone you respect in that way? Seems like you guys have similar process.
Yeah, I fucking respect Kevin Parker so much. I respect him so much. You know what? Lonerism was fucking huge for me, actually. And so was the record before that. Forget the name now. But I had like a huge time with Tame Impala. Every time a Tame Impala record comes out, I'd have a huge time with it. But yeah, like, I think I really like self-contained producers, and I sometimes don't even know someone is, but I like their music, and then I eventually find it out. Like the guy from Metronomy, I love him.
Right on.
He just runs around with this thing. Who else is Unknown Mortal Orchestra? I love them. And
right on.
I eventually found out that guy's like a soul kind of producer. It just takes a little lunchbox of plugins and just runs around the world making his music.
Yeah.
And I love that. I just really love the freedom that is. Do you know what I mean? so cool to be able to just make your music anywhere. And that's, I've finally, like, after releasing this record and seeing that it's been enjoyed, and I did this record with the least amount of stuff out of any record.
Yeah, right.
That, to me, it getting accepted the best is an interesting thing, and it makes me feel good because I feel like there is a less is more situation.
But it's also, it seems to me, it's such a craft in what you do and what you, and those other people you're referring to as solo, because you're doing everything, and it's such a skill base that you have to get. The sound on this record, the polish, the space, the way that it all fits together, it must be satisfying.
I love that. And that is like, so that's like a, I was explaining to my friend, I was like imagining it with this record, it was like four different corners. And then within each corner, like I could have a broad spectrum of what the songs sound like, but they all have to relate to these four different corners. So, you know, for instance, if I'm going to record Shaker in the record, what I like to do was have a particular way I would record my Shakers, so that they would connect with other songs. Even if the song sounded really different with the bass, there would be this little, you've got the right top right corner, you're hearing the shaker. You know what I mean? So I realized that those like auditory connective things are what kind of, you know, you send out a little line to, oh, this is on the Jungle's Love Signs record, because you can hear the way it's recorded is referenceable.
Okay.
You know?
Can we talk about like Love Signs in particular, like the song? Like how long would it have taken you to make that song from start to finish?
This one was pretty much in one night. I made this with my fiance and we stayed up till about 5 a.m. getting fucked up.
The margarita session.
Just recording margarita session. And because I already had the bare bones of the song, but I wasn't really sure what to do with it. Then Grace and I just got some margaritas and worked on it all night. And in the morning it was done.
Wonderful.
Pick it up, pick it up.
A couple of quick questions, music related ones, and I'll let you get out of here.
Awesome.
Do you have any favorite guitarists? Like, who do you think is who's the greatest guitarist of all time, or a guitarist that you like?
You know, it's funny because I'm not really like a guitar person. I don't even consider myself good at guitar.
You consider yourself a drummer. Drummer's the main thing.
Yeah, 100%. Right. Yeah, 100%. Okay. I play the guitar to make the songs, but, you know, I'm not very good at it. But you know, if I was to pick someone that I think is like, I love their guitar playing and it's a poignant part of their music, is Unknown Mortal Orchestra. I love hearing that guitarist play. It's so amazing.
Tell me which Unknown Mortal Orchestra song should we listen to? I got so good at being in trouble. Is at the top of the list?
Oh, that's a great one. Actually, yeah. Can you play that one?
Yeah.
That one is so good.
See, this is really why I do this podcast. Like, I just love finding new songs. And
do you know this?
No.
Oh, dude, you will fucking love this.
There's so much music. There's so much great music.
This is train music, man. Listen to this on the train.
Do you have, you've already mentioned Bon Iver being a huge thing, and I imagine he'd be up there, but what do you listen to chill out around the house?
Oh, I've got a good one for that. Home Shake. Home, you ever heard of Home Shake?
Nah.
So this is Mac DeMarco's guitarist and this is his band.
Okay.
I love it.
How ambient are we talking here?
It drops, it comes.
Hey. Are you even paying attention to me right now?
Oh, that's lovely. That bass line actually reminds me of Early Hermitude we were talking about earlier, like that kind of that tempo.
Yeah.
Nice, man. And when you want to party, when you want to fire up before a gig or something like that, what music do you put on for that?
Whoa, man, you know, I have one that jacks me the fuck up. I have a song that really gets me jacked.
Hit me.
But it's not like, it's not what you think.
I mean, you're a guy who listens to Bon Iver when you're dry. You know, it's like.
Yeah. Oh, but this one, I could drive faster, this one too. The Doobie Brothers, What a Fool Believes.
What the Fool?
This is my all-time favorite song of all time.
Ooh.
It just goes. Sounds like the sun coming out.
This is your favorite song of all time.
All time, man. All time. I listen to this actually all the fucking time.
Awesome. Well, go on then. Give me your other four of your top five. What are you?
Okay.
Hit me.
Oh yeah. Another one of the. Okay. Opossum. Get Away Tonight.
How did you come across Opossum?
This is one of the guys in Unknown Mortal Orchestra.
Right.
This is his side project. And this record was that huge for me. And you should check it out. Because there's some really weird. He's such an amazing producer. He's wild, and this was his like outlet outside of the band to just make really fucking weird experimental music, and it's so cool.
Love it.
Okay, and next one.
A couple more.
Is Bees by Caribou.
Oh wow, cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty new, Caribou. 2019.
Wait, this one.
Hmm.
This one is from. This is 2005. This.
Oh,
one.
Oh right. Okay.
From The Milk of Human Kindness. Yeah. This is really good drum music, you know.
But it very much sits in you. Yeah, I can see it in your style. That acoustic electronic blend, soulful songwriting.
And dude, skip halfway. It's like a try. See if it's dropped in yet. There's a bit where here you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. That's kind of that drum beat's like DJ Shadow for me.
Oh, it's crazy. It is.
I love this shit. Wow.
Crazy, right?
Water's coming in. Wow. Sound of an electric kettle in there.
Yeah.
That's huge sound. I love that.
It's mental. And it's so... See, this is like... The way he produces songs is he's like super deceptive, and you'll think one thing, and then if you never accidentally skip halfway through a Caribou song because you'll ruin the treat. You know what I mean? You just have to sit and wait.
That's rad. Yeah, I'll definitely listen to that some more. Enjoy that very much. All right, one more, Sam.
Okay, one more.
One more, two more.
One more, two more. The next one actually is L.A. Priest. And the song is called What Moves. And this is kind of a newer song, but this is like... This song I just think it's so for me right now.
Right on.
How like flunky is that?
How'd you come across LA Priest?
I actually don't know. I think actually my friend Louis, he shows me so much music, and he showed me this because I think, oh yeah. So what happened was Soul Wax did a remix of this, and then we got onto that remix, and then we went back and discovered LA Priest, and this record is so cool, and I just kind of sat with it. I think it was around this time last year. Actually, I was just obsessed with it.
Fantastic. I dig it.
Yeah.
Did you have any other ones on your list you wanted to talk about there? Or is that the five?
You know, I've actually, because I've pre-mentioned one of the ones, which is the Bon Iver Holocene. That was in my...
Indeed.
Yeah. Is that okay? I mean, I could pull out another one as well.
No, man. I want to listen to Holocene again. Because when are you guys getting married?
Oh, well, we don't know. We just on Friday we got engaged.
Yeah, so congratulations. Fresh as. That's very
thank
exciting.
You.
I imagine you got to play some Bon Iver at the wedding, I would imagine.
She hates it. She hates
Bon
Iver.
Oh, no!
She thinks it sucks.
At our wedding, we had like, we each had a song as we came in. So, you know, she had like Vaporized by Yeah, Yeah, Yeahs. I came in, I had like Lyrics Born, I Changed My Mind. So you each got to have, you know, a song each. And then we had
That's
a song
fair.
That we both liked, All Is Love by Karen O as the one. The music was very carefully, choreographed at my...
Yeah, it's got to be. You know, so Grace also loves What a Fool Believes by the Doobie Brothers. So
sure.
We, you know, I think we share that, you know, we can 50-50 that at the wedding, I reckon.
Lovely. Well, that's great, Sam. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Good to chat to you.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing this, mate. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, no worries, man. That was fun.
That's it. Thanks so much to Sam for taking part. I discovered so much great music talking to him. If you heard anything you like, all the songs are in a Spotify playlist. You can find it in the episode description. We have tons more great episodes coming up, including brand new interviews with KLP, Adam from Peking Duck, Jack from Bag Raiders, and there's also a huge archive of episodes ready for you to check out right now that features the presets, Fly Facilities, Hermitude, Sneaky Sound System, and so much more. Just subscribe on your podcast app and check them out. If you'd like to send me a message, I'm Hot Dub Time Machine on all the social medias, and I'll see you next time. Bye.